So as you see from my title, I will be talking about how to set up a resource theory of purity and how diagonalization of states plays a major role in it. So this is part of work with Giulio Chiribella, and where the final goal is just the foundations of thermodynamics. So why foundation of thermodynamics? Well, because there are still some kind of unsatisfactory problems in classical thermodynamics, despite the success of classical statistical mechanics. So for example, we have a microscopic level where everything is pure and reversible, and we have a macroscopic level where we have irreversibility, and it's not very well clear how to transition from one level to the other. But quantum physics provides a solution because, thanks to entanglement and all the related works about how entanglement generates thermalization in quantum thermodynamics, we can try to find a way of reconciling these two aspects and size of the world. And I mean, besides that, I mean, we want also to study how thermodynamics impacts on nanotechnology and system where only very few particles and microscopic particles are involved. So we have to think in a different way from classical thermodynamics. So we know that in thermodynamics, information plays a major role. And as we know with Maxwell's Zeeman and Dowell's principle, and as such, we'd like to have an approach to the foundation of thermodynamics involving information as one of the privileged agents and one of the privileged concepts in this search. Therefore, instead of addressing it in standard quantum mechanics, we want to address it in general probabilistic theories, GPTs, because in this case we can strip away all the mathematical details of quantum theory and just go to the bare bone of the informational properties of the theory we are investigating. And as a byproduct, we can also get some kind of insights on the foundations of quantum mechanics. By taking this thermodynamics perspective, maybe we can see that if we impose some kind of thermodynamics constraints on our theory, we can also get some kind of insights of what this implies for quantum theory. So my outline will be, first of all, talk a little bit about the formalism used in my analysis, then go into the core subject with just how to define an operational definition of the resource theory of purity and how this is related to the diagonalization of states and the measurization criterion. So let's start with some formalism. So here we use a specific variant of general probabilistic theories called operational probabilistic theories, OPTs, where instead of taking the set of states as the primitive and central entity, we take processes as the main objects. And that's also particularly useful in thermodynamics because thermodynamics is a theory of processes, which transformations are possible and which are impossible, or which can be done easily or not easily. So that's everything about processes. So this theory has, formalism has some kind of nice graphic language. So here we have a diagram where we have states. This is a state, these are transformations, we can compose them in some ways, and then we can make some measurements. So state is a particular transformation without any input, and measurements are just specific transformation without output, or at least they have classical output, or we don't represent it. So a particular kind of transformation which will play a major role are just reversible transformation, which means just transformation that can be inverted in some kind of sequential compositional sense. So now let's introduce the probabilistic side of this theory, which is just when I take a state and I measure it, I get a probability. That's the standard notion we have even in quantum mechanics. From this, we can have a notion of sums for transformation. And from this notion of sum, we can also set up vector spaces. So vector spaces of states and effects and transformations. And in such vector spaces, we can define coarse graining and purity. And here we have a mathematical definition of purity. So we say that a transformation T is pure if it can't be written as a sum of other transformations unless in a trivial way. So everything at this stage is very mathematical. So now we want to have more operational definition of purity, less based on this kind of mathematical structure and more on physical grounds, at least for pure states. And that's why we talk about a resource theory of purity. And we take the resource theoretic approach. So in a resource theoretic approach, we have a set of resources, and some of them are more valuable, some others are less valuable. But the important thing is that we can go from one resource to another by means of transformations. So the basic distinction is that between free and non-free resources, some resources are very abundant, so they are free and we can freely have them. Some other instead are more valuable. And the important thing is that we have a set of free operations which are very easy to implement transformations, which connect different resources, and we use these free operations to construct a pre-order on resources. So a pre-order is just a relation which is reflexive and transitive, but not anti-symmetric. So here we say that a resource A is more valuable than a resource B if I can find a free transformation going from A to B. And that will be the general setup for what I'm going to do. So let's see what happens in quantum mechanics, which is always a good source of examples and understanding. So in quantum mechanics, the prototypical resource theory of purity is this one, which was developed by Ordetsky and Oppenheim. In this resource theory, the most valuable resources are just pure states, as the name says. So on the other side, we have the free states are just the maximally mixed state, which is just the invariant state. The identity, essentially, multiple the identity. And then we have free operations, which are called noisy operations, so which are of this form. So we have basically a state here. Then we just append an ancillary system like called E, like environment, in the maximally mixed state. Then we let them evolve according to this unitary transformation. Then we get rid of the environment. So this has some problems because it's not topologically closed. So in order to be, to have a very well-defined theory, we need to take the topological closure because, so when we want to say that when we can approximate a process arbitrarily well, we are also able to do that process. So that's why we require that. So that's this technicality. So, but let's see why this is important for thermodynamics. So for thermodynamics, we should obviously think of thermal states, and the maximally mixed state is a particular thermal state of the trivial Hamiltonian. So it's a very toy theory or primitive model for a theory of thermodynamics. And let's see what these operations mean from a thermodynamic point of view. So the free operations are preparing thermal states because they are free states, then putting a system in contact with a thermal environment. That's what we did. And then let them evolve. And then remove the thermal state, which is just some kind of thermalizing operation. So that's why it's significant for thermodynamics. And a further improvement would be to take thermal states of non-trivial Hamiltonian and analyze what happens. But it's much more complicated to do in general probabilistic theory. So let's start with this kind of simple example. There's really a lot to say. So let's try to understand how we can achieve this in general probabilistic theories. Is it possible to take this kind of approach where the free state is a maximally mixed state to be considered as a third kind of thermal state? So here, maximally mixed state can be thought as invariant state, which means state left invariant by all reversible transformations. First problem, in general, the maximally mixed state may not exist. The maximally mixed state doesn't even exist in infinite dimensional quantum theory. So that's a real problem. So in general, we may not have this. Second problem, if it exists, it may not be unique. In this case, we would have some kind of problem in defining what the actual maximally mixed state to consider as a free state or thermal state is. Third problem, a little bit tricky, if it exists And even if it's unique, there may be another problem. This is a rather subtle problem, a little bit more mathematical. The problem is that if we want to have a very well-defined and nice resource theory, we require that free states are stable under tensor products. In other words, if we have we take the product of two invariant states, which are considered to be free, we want that that product is free. But in general, the product of two invariant states is not an invariant state. So at least in general. This is true clearly in quantum theory, but we don't know. So we need to find another way. And the other way just comes from taking another approach, because in quantum theory there are several different ways of defining a resource theory of purity, which are inequivalent in terms of free operation, but they give rise to the same preorder. So let's take this, which is, so let's forget about purity and about maximum mixed states, thermal states, and take this other approach, which is more related to some kind of theory of control. So let's suppose we have some kind of experimenter acting on a closed system, and this experimenter wants to implement some kind of dynamics or evolutions. So since the system is closed, we may want to assume that the only allowed evolutions are reversible. But this experimenter doesn't have perfect control on what he's going to apply as reversible dynamics. So it has some uncertainty, some fluctuations. Therefore, what we have is just a mixture of reversible operation. This idea was put forward by Ullmann in 1971, when he, in different setting, but he was studying, random unitary channels in quantum mechanics. And therefore, we define this, that's the analog of random unitary channels, which are called random reversible channels, or RARE for short. So a random reversible channel is just a convex combination of reversible transformations. So we have a probability distribution. So it means that our agent is not able to control which reversible transformation he applies. So he just has some kind of uncertainty given by this probability distribution. That's it. That's just the definition. Let's see how this comes into being in this resource theory. So we declare RARE channels to be free operations. On the other hand, we, in principle, we don't have any free states. So, that's not a problem, because we may think of examples of theories which don't have any kind of free states, unless the trivial states, just of the trivial systems. And then we define the preorder in this way. So we say that a state rho is purer than another state sigma if we apply a random reversible transformation on rho and we get sigma. So this idea is some kind of resource theoretic approach, was also developed by Müller and Mazanes. They were concerned with completely different things of encoding spatial directions in qubits. So they had different things, but it's very similar. So the important thing is that this is the most general definition of resource theory of purity we can give, because we don't need any assumption, no need of assuming the existence of free states, of the existence of invariant states, just simple, as simple as it goes. So strictly speaking, this is just a theory of control, because we have defined an agent as something controlling a system. So how is it related to purity? Well, what's always true is that if a state is more controllable, or this kind of, I said purer, but I should say more controllable than a pure state, then it is pure. But there are some tricky things, in some kind of tricky state spaces, that prevent us from an easy identification of controllability with purity. Anyway, if we have that our set, a set of reversible transformations allowed by the theory acts transitively on the set of pure states, then we can identify this kind of controllability with purity. So we have a theory of control is a theory of purity if and only if we have this kind of reversible actions on the set of pure states. That's saying, getting some kind of insights on foundations of a theory just by completely different sides, starting from resource theory, right, which is not exactly, we may not think it's exactly fundamental in the theory, but from it, we may infer some conditions on the very basic structure of the theory. That's it. Let's move to the second part. So what we have here is that we want to have a practical tool to analyze when states can be converted from one to the other by means of rare channels. So in quantum mechanics, we have majorization. So majorization is just, as you know, a very practical and convenient tool for analyzing the convertibility of states under some transformations, especially transformation involved with purity. So what we have, we take the eigenvalues of states, which are just a probability distribution. We order them in decreasing order, for example, and then we sum over the entries in decreasing order, and we compare them. If all these conditions are satisfied, then we say that the first vector is majorized by the second vector of probabilities. And the good thing is that this criterion captures the convertibility of states under the purity preorder defined by means of noisy operations in the quantum theory, as well also in the classical case. So this is more or less like reducing the problem from the GPT to the classical side, because instead of thinking operationally, we just want to think in terms of comparing vectors, which are essentially classical entities, which is a much easier problem. So the question is, can we set up a majorization theory and criterion also in general probabilistic theories? In another way, we want to see whether we can extract some kind of eigenvalues or something related to them, even in general probabilistic theories, when we don't have any kind of linear structures or Hilbert space or matrices. So why we want to do that? And besides the fact that it's interesting in its own respect, the reason is that from majorization we get entropies very easily as sure concave functions, which are just function preserving the majorization preorder. And that's clearly important for thermodynamics. The first stage, I mean, thermodynamics, especially the second, we want entropies. That's an easy way of getting entropies, especially Shannon entropy. But first of all, as I said, we need to define the eigenvalues of states, which is not an easy task. So a first attempt of defining the eigenvalues was done by Chiribella, Dariano, and Perinotti in their context of reconstruction of quantum theory from axiom. But they use stronger axioms than the one I will present here. And then also Barnum and other NO, they just used this eigenvalue and the majorization to set up a theory of thermodynamics in general probabilistic theories, but they didn't want to derive the eigenvalues from principle, but they just more or less assumed that every state could be diagonalized, and then they derived some consequences out of it. Here instead, we want to derive also the diagonalization of states in terms of basic principles. Of course, now it's time to introduce some axioms. Let's start. So the first one, maybe you may be surprised that I don't start with causality, which is just maybe one of the easiest and most popular axioms. I'll do that later, because this is more general than causality. It makes no reference to causal theories. This is just a very basic requirement. So whenever we have pure transformations, we can connect them either one after another or in parallel. And what we get out of it is another pure transformation. So as a result, is that we have the product of two pure states is pure. Again, so what happens here is that if this axiom fails, we have some kind of, let's call it, non-local loss of information, because what I mean by non-local is, I can explain it. So suppose we have two devices, A and B. They are both pure, so we have maximum information what's going on here. Suppose that when we compose them, the thing isn't pure, then the loss of information isn't localized on A or B, but it's just more or less widespread on the whole connection. Maybe we may think that this is there's something leaking from the nodes connecting them. And this, I mean, a failure of purity preservation would constitute a serious obstacle in building any kind of experiment, but because whenever we connect something, even if we have maximum information, we just lose information by simply connecting things. So that's why we don't want this to happen and why we assume purity preservation. The second axiom, as promised, is causality. So this is the Pavia formulation. So the outcome probabilities of present experiments are not affected by the choice of future measurements. So we don't have some kind of action from the future into the past. But I'm more interested in this equivalent formulation that for every system, causality implies the existence of a unique deterministic effect. Deterministic means occurring, I wouldn't say with unit probability, but it means that it makes up a measurement on its own. That's it. So we can use this deterministic effect to discard information and, for example, consider the marginal of states. So whenever I have a bipartite state, I can always consider the marginal by tracing out one of the system. And in order to do that, I just apply this. And I always can do that because I know that this effect exists. And this is important in thermodynamics, because in thermodynamics, what we want to do is just move all around from larger to smaller systems and vice versa. So here is one of the two directions. So we want to go from larger to smaller system. And it's easier because this implies only discarding information, and it can be done by means of this kind of deterministic effect. Then we go to this kind of axiom, which is very special. And for example, it's not satisfied by classical theory, but only by quantum theory and some kind of quantum-like theories. So it's made of two parts. The first part is that every state can be purified. It means that I can always find a pure state such that my original state arises from it as a marginal of that state. And the second part, which is even more interesting, is that some kind of uniqueness of purification, in the sense that whenever I have two purification of the same state and with the same purifying system, they differ by a reversible transformation on the purifying system. It means that somehow the choice of purification is very rigid, in the sense that if I know what's happening on my system A, I know the state rho, the choice I have for a state psi and what's happening also in system B is limited, so such that they are related by this kind of reversal transformation. Somehow everything is determined by system A itself. So it constrains a lot what's going on. So this extension has to be not a generic one, but has to obey this kind of uniqueness rule. And that's actually the important part where all this kind of reversible features of quantum mechanics comes from. So why purification? Because it may sound strange, yes? Yes?
Couldn't those B systems, it has to be the same B system, is it? I mean, they could be different dimensions in generals. These ancilla systems could have...
Yeah, the purifying system must be the same.
It has to be the same pure.
Yeah, it has to be the same.
So there's no relation. If you choose a different purifying system, yeah, you're not imposing any.
If you choose a different, then you can always, I mean, for example, complete it.
Suppose you have, let's say, B and C. And you have C here. By means of purity preservation, you can add here some kind of gamma on system C and some kind of beta on system B here. These are pure because the products of pure states is pure. And then now you have that this psi tensor gamma and psi prime tensor beta have the same purifying system, which is B and C. At this stage, you can say that these differ by a reversible transformation.
And then you can always kill the other system by taking the deterministic effect here on C. So that's, in this way, you have this kind of channel like this. So it's of this form. This is the case when you have different purifier systems. So why? I mean, it rules out classical theory. Maybe we don't want to rule out classical theory, or maybe we do. So the interesting thing is that here we have, with purification, we can go from from mixed to pure states. And also we can go from irreversible operation to reversible operation, which just was proved in the original paper when this axiom was introduced. So we can go from a picture where everything is irreversible and with partial information to a level where everything is pure and reversible. That's appealing for thermodynamics and for solving the problem of going from the microscopic to the macroscopic level. The interesting thing is that all dilation and extension theory like Stein spring and other things follow from this and can be reconstructed from purification. And the interesting thing is that in this way, we are entitled to go from a smaller system to a larger system in thermodynamics. Usually a small system is open, and we don't know how to deal with open systems. So even in classical theory, what we do is just we enlarge open systems such that we include the environment and we deal with some isolated system. So this is, according to me, just a very ad hoc procedure in classical physics. Whereas in quantum theory, it's justified, formally justified by these axioms, because from purification, you just have all these dilation theorems and everything which isn't reversible becomes reversible in a larger picture as if the system were isolated. That's why I think it's an appealing axiom for thermodynamics. And unfortunately, I mean, or depends on the point of views, this rules out quantum theory. And if we want to take this axiom of purification as a good starting point for thermodynamics, we have to renounce classical theory, and maybe we want to have a theory which has some kind of non-classical features. Indeed, purification implies the existence of entangled states. And ultimately, this is the basis, the informational basis of all the thermalization results appeared recently in the literature about how to reconstruct thermal states by means of interactions with an environment and tracing out the environment in the quantum case. On the other hand, that's good news for the resource theory of purity based on maximally mixed states or invariant states, because this guarantees the existence of a unique invariant state for every system. So we are on the right way to define a system. But at the moment, we are not sure whether the product of two invariant states is also an invariant state. Let's go on with this new axiom. Yes?
I'm not too familiar with this theorem that you just quoted. It says you could replace any irreversible by pure, but it sounds a little bit too good to be true. Are you saying you can take any dynamics at all?
No, you can't replace it on the same system, but if you take another system, then...
No, I know, but the same system, I guess you mean... What do you mean, the same state?
So if I have...
But in the real world, you have, for example, open systems tend to obey highly non-Markovian evolution. How can you put that here? You have to have...
Because you include the environment, that's the trick.
Yeah, I know, but the environment, you'd have to have some sort of parallel. I don't know, the environment would have to go well for a while and then come back in. Or another way of asking questions, can you just in simple language state what that theorem claims?
Oh, the theorem claims that, let me write it here. So whenever you have some kind of generic channel, quantum channel in quantum theory, you can always find another system such that on the combined system of your initial system plus the ancilla, you describe it as a reversible operation. Diagrams, so suppose you have your quantum channel going from A to B.
Actually, you can push harder with the talk.
It's
hard
okay.
to see that. I don't know.
Sorry. So you consider another system E, like the environment, which is initially in a pure state. That's the important thing. This is your globally, you have something unitary going on. And then in order to get rid of the environment here, you have to trace it out.
Is this environment in a parallax state initially with the system A?
Yeah. I mean, this is just the thing here. So you can always find an environment E and a state.
But in the real systems, the environment starts, after a little while, the environment is correlated with the system that you're interested in. I'm just saying, it doesn't seem that this quite accords with an ordinary way of describing an open system. Your channel would be a particular time, maybe, and then another channel for the next time.
Yeah.
Then it wouldn't fit this way. And if you took the channel to be from the very beginning to the very end,
yes,
maybe it would fit.
Yes, that's right. And another possible explanation is that, in general, maybe this environment is not the environment you think. It may be another one.
Well, that's also possible.
Yes.
But
so I said, maybe you have correlation just because you're taking the wrong environment. I mean, it's not the physical environment. You have to take something different. You are forgetting something. That's why you get a very complicated situation where you don't
have... I think what I'm trying to say is from the intermediate state of the system,
right.
You don't know how it will evolve. You need information about its past as well.
Yes.
That's the non-Markovian
case. Yes, exactly. So the thing is that we may want to, if we think of this as the evolution of the system from the first instant of time to the end of it, then this is easy. What about an intermediate step? In intermediate step, maybe the trick is that to choose the environment, not the environment you would expect, than the thing. Something, a different physical system.
Maybe a useful way to think about it is that this is generic if you have control over the input of the box. So if I say I want to know what kinds of maps this box can implement, given that I am allowed to control the input state, then I'm intervening and cutting off any dependence on earlier states of the system.
Okay.
So then this initial correlation between environment and system isn't relevant anymore.
Yeah.
Because I've cut it off.
Right, in that context, it's not relevant.
Yeah, so I think that's how you should think of this. That's how you should think of this. This is a characterization of a box wherein I control the input.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but then it becomes somewhat of a question how much it applies to thermodynamics of what subset of thermodynamics open systems can actually be captured by this framework.
Because
in that case, you're not controlling the inputs.
Well, in this picture, I mean, how I present it, you may want to control. So you want to apply some transformation on the system and drive the evolution according to some law you decide, or you have some kind of partial control on it. That's why you have this kind of probability distribution over it. So somehow you control the input, but the interesting thing is that in principle you can always find another system such that the combined evolution of this thing is reversible, whereas in general in classical theory this you can't do. That's why I say that's interesting for the foundation of thermodynamics from this point of view, because in classical theory there's no way out of this problem. So you
you just have to postulate more or less that you can do this, but there's no mathematical.
Classical thermodynamics, you could just put in a stochastic evolution model for the system of interest.
Yes.
You don't need to purify.
No, that's the thing, but you want this to be pure. That's the point.
I know, but why?
Why? Because you know that at the microscopic level, you don't have stochastic evolution. Everything's deterministic, governed by Hamilton's equation.
Maybe we know, maybe we don't.
Okay, that's essentially the reason. So this was proposed to bridge the gap between the deterministic level, the microscopic level, and some kind of stochastic or emergent level, microscopic. That's the reason why it was interesting, this kind of postulate. So let's go on with this other thing. So this sounds a little bit more technical. So we want for every system that there exists some kind of pure effect. Pure means not further decomposable, occurring with unit probabilities on some state, at least one. What does it mean in easier terms? So we can always think of an effect as a part of a binary test, some kind of yes-no test. And since the effect is pure, we can associate an elementary property with it, some property that can be further decomposed, some kind of basic property of the system. And this axiom enforces that all systems have at least one property possessed by some state, which is a particular specific state where which gives one when we apply this effect. So let's see what consequences we have from this axiom. So we have a duality between pure states and pure effects. I should say normalized pure states and normalized pure effects, such that for every pure state, there is a unique pure effect, alpha dagger, occurring with unit probability on that state, and vice versa. The other thing is that we managed to derive the existence of perfectly distinguishable pure states. So we don't have to assume from the very beginning that perfectly distinguishable states exist, because in general they may not exist in any possible conceivable theory. So their existence follows from this axiom. And then the final important result is that every state can be diagonalized, which means, my definition, decomposed as a mixture of perfectly distinguishable pure states. Perfectly distinguishable means that they can be distinguished by a single shot measurement with certainty. So the important thing is that in general, every mixed state can be decomposed as a mixture of other states, but here we require that these states are pure and they are also perfectly distinguishable. This all follows from the axioms. Yes?
Do you have to assume some marginality at some point?
No, it's not necessary.
For all the previous results, even, for example, unique invariant state, you don't need to...
No, for every system there is a unique invariant state. So what we don't know is whether the product of two invariant states is also an invariant state. If we had tomographic locality, we could conclude that, but we don't assume it.
But for even for single system, how do you conclude that there is an
unique
state?
You conclude because purification implies that the group or reversible transformation is compact.
Do you use half measure?
Yes.
But I think the problem is without tomographic locality, it's pretty hard to define transformations because it's not locally defined.
No, indeed, we don't take local definition of transformation.
But then if you integrate over a hard measure of all the reversible transformations, then I don't know how large the set of the transformations are, because two transformations can be identical on a single system, but then when they act on, say, bipartite states, they can differ. But then you have many different transformations that are identical on a single system.
Yes.
But do you integrate over all of them for the hard measure?
For the hard measure, yes, we do that. Yes.
Do you know that that's
that being proved.
That can be done.
Yes. Was proved in the paper when I introduced purification for the first time.
This one by Chiribella, Dariano, and Perinotti. In the end, you'll find all the references in 2010. They show that this is a constant. They assume, but they didn't use that on
for the derivation.
I think we used generalized Tri-Minkowski isomorphism.
Yes.
But that assumes tomographic modality.
Yes, but there's a version of it not assuming that.
Yes, that's the thing. It's weaker than that version presented there, but there's a version. I know because so I wrote my master thesis on this kind of thing, and I didn't want to assume tomographic locality, but at some point I had to assume this Choi-Yamolkowski isomorphism, and I wanted to see whether there was a way around. And actually, the statement is weaker without tomographic locality, but you get the same result. I mean, the important thing is not undermined by the failure of tomographic locality to get the invariant state. We are there. So, okay. So I said we managed to diagonalize states, which means to write them as a convex combination of perfectly distinguishable pure states. And we called the coefficients of such decomposition as the eigenvalues of the diagonalization. Note that I said the eigenvalues of the diagonalization, not of the state, because in general, they may depend on what states appear here in general. So that's why I was careful to say that. Indeed, the issue is a little bit delicate. But the interesting thing is that we have strong evidence, it's still a work in progress with Giulio Chiribella, that the eigenvalues of states are uniquely defined even without assuming anything else. But at the moment, since this hasn't been completely fixed, it's better to add some two other requirements which guarantee the unique diagonalization of states. So the first requirement is strong symmetry. So here I take two maximal sets of perfectly distinguishable pure states. So it means that they are pure states. They are perfectly distinguishable and they are maximal. Maximal in the sense that I can't add any other state because if I do that, they are not perfectly distinguishable anymore. And for every two such sets, I can always find a reversible transformation connecting them, which means that associates a pure state with every single, associates a pure state of the former system with every pure state of the latter system. The other one is called permutability, and was originally proposed by Hardy, such that whenever I have a maximal set here, I add of pure states, and I want to do a permutation of them, I can always do that by means of a reversible channel. So surprisingly, these two axioms, although permutability is weaker than strong symmetry, under the other axioms are equivalent. That's one of the results of the accepted talk at QPL conference this year, so I don't want to spoil too much, but anyway, the important thing is that these two axioms are completely equivalent, so we can either assume one or the other, and they imply each other. Under these two axioms, we get that the eigenvalues of states are uniquely defined, for sure, but we think that these are not necessary. And then we get that the product of two invariant states is invariant, even without assuming local tomography. Again, this also is not strictly necessary. Again, we have this kind of evidence. But the important thing is that from the resource theoretic perspective is that now we have that the invariant states are stable under tensor products, so we can rightfully assume chi, the invariant state, to be a free state without any harm done to the mathematical structure of the theory. That's another important thing. That's another result in QPL this year. So let's see what this implies as far as majorization and the resource theory of purity is concerned. So if we have two states, rho and rho prime, and we have their eigenvalues, p and p prime, now we can rightfully talk about eigenvalues of states rather than diagonalizations. And what we have these two equivalent conditions. So we have a rare channel connecting the first state to the latter, and the eigenvalues of the latter state are majorized by the eigenvalues of the former state. These are equivalent conditions. I mean, so we get the result that in under these assumptions, majorization is equivalent to purity defined by means of rare channels. But again, a recent result. So we prove that, in fact, permutability strong symmetry is necessary, is a necessary axiom if we want majorization to be sufficient under the previous axioms. So if we assume that P prime is majorized by P, can we conclude that there is a rare channel going from rho to rho prime? The answer in general is no, unless we assume permutability strong symmetry. And this is a necessary assumption. That's an important thing. So whereas for the other implication, again, we think that permutability strong symmetry isn't necessary. So convertibility under random reversible channels implies majorization, even without permutability strong symmetry. But the converse isn't true, because here we have that it's necessary. Yes?
What you just said in words, I don't see how it matches that, because your theorem says that these two things are equivalent, so it's an if and only if.
Yeah, under the axiom I stated before, so including also permutability strong symmetry.
I see. Okay, so the present axiom includes the permutability.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the comment below is that if you excluded that, you could only have one direction.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
The other thing.
Understand. You saw permutability followed from the other axiom.
No. I said that permutability and strong symmetry are equivalent.
But what did you say that you saw you're working on with Giulio that you're not sure if it's true?
So that here, I mean, permutability strong symmetry are not necessary to derive these results about uniqueness of the eigenvalues, about the tensor product of invariant states to be invariant. So these are not strictly necessary. But they are independent, this is what we think. But strictly speaking, we think they're not necessary. We have this work in progress. And what they said is that even permutability strong symmetry is not necessary to have one of the implications. That's even kind of strong evidence about that. But to have the other direction of the implication, that it's necessary. So we can't escape it. So now the question is, what theories satisfy this axiom besides quantum theory? Good question. I mean, there are examples of quantum theory, of course, itself. Then we have real quantum theory, because we are not assuming local tomography. And then we have some kind of thing, also a recent developed theory called fermionic quantum theory by people in Pavia satisfies this axiom, which is not quantum theory, just kind of quantum theory with some superselection rule. That's it. Then let's go quickly to the conclusions. So let's sum up. So we have a resource theory of purity defined in terms of random reversible transformations, or channels. The interesting thing is that there is an easy link between this theory and the resource theory of entanglement in terms of LOCC protocols, even in general probabilistic theories. And this is done again via purification. So again, we have this kind of resource theory of purity, which has some kind of thermodynamic flavor, is connected with a theory of entanglement. So this helps bridge the gap between entanglement and thermalization, even in general probabilistic theories. And then other result is that
the axioms guarantee that every state can be diagonalized and that we have perfectly distinguishable pure states. So everything is interesting from this point of view. And from that, we get also majorization. And the interesting thing is that this axiom opened the way for other definition of purity in general probabilistic theories, because once we know that the invariant state is stable, is unique, exists, it's unique, and it's stable under tensor product, then we can also try to set up a theory of purity resembling the model proposed by Orodetsky and Oppenheim in terms of noisy operation, and also another model based on unital channel. Then we get that majorization plays a role in characterizing and describing the resource theory of purity under the present sets of axioms. And the interesting thing, again, QPL spoiler, this happens also if we define purity in terms of different classes of free operation. Under the present set of axioms, they are all characterized by majorization. So the preorder is always the same, even if we have strict inclusions between the classes of reversible of free operation between these things. So if you want to hear more, come to QPL, or maybe wait until the paper is up on the archive, which should hopefully appear soon. Thank you very much for your attention.
Way back at the beginning, when you were talking about how to define a resource theory of purity in GPTs, there was an option that you didn't consider. It's sort of the analog of what you and I spoke about earlier. You could just say, now that we've got this notion of just reversible channels, you could ask, what families of states could I add in the ancilla together with the reversible channels and discarding that would get me something non-trivial?
Yeah, right.
Not just reproduce everything over again. And you'd say, that's what I mean by the resource theory of purity. So that's what teaches me what the free states are. And you know, it wouldn't have to be unique, so it might be unlike the quantum theory in the sense that the quantum theory has one maximally mixed state, but it wouldn't be a problem if it was not unique, because the definition doesn't require it. Do you have any sense what would happen if you... Because this is a lot simpler than the thermal case.
Here it is. Honestly, we haven't thought about that, this approach, also because the main concern was to relate this with the theory of entanglement. And then in this sense, we were more or less driven to this kind of definition, because it's just the natural definition of purity arising when you want to compare this kind of notion with the theory of entanglement. And this is the natural definition of the resource theory of purity if we want to have this kind of duality with entanglement, because this definition appearing in this paper... Oh, I forgot to show the references. Sorry. Yeah, here it is. So the main concern of the paper was to establish a relation between entanglement and purity. That's why we went straight forward and directly to that definition, because there was the one naturally matching the definition of entanglement. Clearly, you may have other things, but in this case, you break this duality between entanglement and purity at the operational level. I mean, in the presence of the other axiom, you can have the same, because based on majorization, but majorization is some kind of, let's say, higher level tool rather than, or lower level, depends on the point of view, than this kind of operational setting. So if you don't want to break the duality at the operational level, then this is the only possible choice, I think, or the most natural, maybe, for the free operation for the purity.
I have another question.
Yes.
Maybe I just missed it, but the random reversible transformations, under your axioms, those can be purified with some invariant state in the ancilla. Like at the end of the day, you say every all and only these random reversible transformations are the ones that can be achieved by a maximum mixed state on the ancilla.
What you want is this. Let me just try to write it here. That's an interesting question indeed. This is answered, I think, if I... So you want
So you have this kind of random reversal transformation. You want to write it as a large unitary. Then you trace out. And here, you input the maximally mixed state, right? Something like that. Like those noisy operation. Actually, to have this, you need also the other axioms at the end. So it was part of the QPL paper.
You need strong symmetry.
You need some strong symmetry. You need purification and other things. And then you can prove that because this is based on controlled reversible transformations. And in order to build them such that they are well defined, then, I mean, this was shown by two colleagues of mine, that you need to assume purification and strong symmetry and, I mean, causality and the existence of perfectly distinguishable states, something like that. Yes. In that case, you can show that rare channels are a subset of noisy operations.
Are there a subset or not? Not that would coincide exactly. You can get more than the rare channels in this way?
Yeah, I think even in quantum theory you can do. There are some kind of counterexamples by Agir, Wolf, and Musa, if I remember well.
On a three-dimensional system, not every unital channel is a mixture of unitaries.
Yeah.
And strictly speaking, you have the analog of a mixture of unitaries.
Yeah. So this is not even for unital channels, it's even the level of this kind of noisy operation. But I remember seeing a reference saying that actually inclusion is strict.
Right. But you could think of that as a deficiency of this approach in a way that, like, if you're sort of committed to purification, then the natural sorts of definitions would be the ones involving, you know, preparing a free state on the ancilla and doing a reversible transformation. And what that yields on the system alone is the analog of the unital quantum channels, not the analog of the mixtures of unitaries. That set is
unital but not random unitary, yes.
Right. Feels like it would be nicer if you had a GPT analog of unitality. Mm-hmm. And then at the end you could hope that once you've got enough axioms, your set of operations on the system would coincide precisely with those that you could get.
Yeah, that's the subject again of this QPM thing. So in this paper, just to sum up, so we compare these different definition of purity gain in terms of random reversible channels, in terms of this noisy operation, in terms of unital channel, which is just channels preserving the invariant state. And we see that we get these the ordinary strict inclusions under the present set of axioms, such that rare channels are strictly included in noisy operation, which are strictly included in unital channels. And then what we get, but despite these inclusions, the preorder induced by all these three classes is the same,
right,
which is given by majorization one again.
Right, which is also analogous to what you see in the quantum mechanics.
Yeah, exactly. So that's very similar to quantum mechanics in this regard.
But I would say probably the physically natural resource theory would be the one that's based on the noisy operations rather than
This has some kind of the flavor of extending a system, which is the essence of more or less of purity gain. The problem is that you need to assume the existence of this or whatever. Maybe we can replace this with some kind of notion of free states, provided it exists. The other thing is that this is only form of word, it's just that these things should be stable under tensor product in order to have this well-defined resource theory, in abstract resource theory like the one presented in the paper where you were also one of the authors.
Other questions? Yes.
So what are some examples within GPT where you cannot diagonalize states?
Where you can't.
Yes.
I think we don't have a concrete example about that, but in principle there may be. So diagonalization is a specific feature such that, first of all, if you don't have perfectly distinguishable states, then you can't hope to diagonalize. The other thing. Unfortunately, the concrete examples we have all always assume the existence of perfectly distinguishable states in some ways or another. For example, classical theories, but also theories with polytopes. There are always
some states which are perfectly distinguishable. There's a measurement perfectly distinguishes some kind of subsets of states from another. So there are some. So I don't have a concrete example, but in principle there may be.
You've defined various things which either I didn't get them at the time or I forgot them, but you talked about free state, invariant states, maybe another thing. What can you review what those are? Invariant state, is that the same as a totally mixed density matrix?
Yes, right. It's the same thing. But in general probabilistic theories, what a maximally mixed state is not clear a priori. So you'd better define it in another way as a state which is left invariant by all reversible transformations. No, that's precisely that thing.
And then you said free state. I didn't
so free state is some kind of a common framework of resource theory. It just they don't mean anything specific. It's a very broad class. So in any resource theory, there are some resources, which are the thing you're interested in. And some resources are precious because they allow you to perform some kind of interesting tasks, and some other are useless. Those useless resources, which are, for example, very abundant or easy to prepare, are so-called free resources, which in this case are free state.
Free in the sense of undetermined, but free in the sense of cost, with no cost to you.
Yes, in that sense, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. Not in the sense that you can take whatever you want. No, just, I mean, every resource view has its own class of free states.
And then I had one other question, which when you talk about this invariant state, that seems to imply you're talking about a finite dimensional system. So how much of this, I mean, some of the most interesting applications of this defining entropy in terms of mixtures of pure states, I think they're actually in infinite dimensional systems.
Exactly.
So how much of this
I forgot to mention is that the definition of purity in terms of random reversible channels doesn't assume the existence of doesn't assume any the existence of an invariant state, which in the infinite dimensional case it's clearly the case. I mean, it doesn't exist. I put it as one of my background assumptions that this work assumed more or less that the vector space generated by states was finite dimensional. It was some kind of background assumption. In that case, you can set up these kind of theories with invariant states, something like that. Otherwise, there's no way out. Another good thing about this random mixtures of unitaries or reversible transformations that they don't need any kind of assumption about the dimension of the state.
So which is the result that carries over to, you just stated, but
this definition of purity in terms
the definition
of,
carries
the definition carries over, yes. Purity in terms of random mixture of reversible transformation, because this doesn't assume anything about the dimension of the system.
What about the other results, like diagonalizability? And
no, the other
eigenvalues.
Let me think. The other results, so the diagonalization is. So this is clearly general. Causality is also general. Purification is general. This, good question. I think this holds, but you don't get a duality if I remember well, because it was told that this breaks down in quantum field theory or something like that.
This breaks down. Well, I'm not sure what this means.
It means for every state there's a unique basic projectile curve with unique probability and vice versa.
Oh, I see. That's not true. Is it true? Why is it not true?
I was told that.
For every pure state, do you identify pure state with a vector in Hilbert space?
Yes.
So why not projection on that vector?
Yes, that's the standard definition. In ordinary quantum mechanics, yes, it works, but they told me that the counterexample was in quantum field theory, so if you take...
But what's the difference? That's what I don't see. What's new in quantum? I mean, there are many new things, but from that point of view, I don't see how quantum fields are different.
Maybe it has to do with, you know, the operator you need to be bounded or something like that. And so you can't...
Well, if it's just a pure... If the notion of pure state... If your idea of quantum field theory, which I think most people, too bad, our expert in quantum field theory just left. But if your idea is that there's Hilbert, say, a separable, doesn't matter, separable Hilbert space associated with the theory, and if your pure state is a vector in that Hilbert space, then,
yeah,
then the projector is still... Now you might ask whether that projector can be written by quasi-local combination of field operators or something like that. That could be questioned.
The problem, I think it was related to the uniqueness rather than the existence. One of the two ways has the problem, one of the two.
It's just coming, if there's a difference, it seems to me, it's either just coming from the infinite dimensionality of the Hilbert space, not from anything more specific to quantum field theory, or it's coming from some requirement on how that projection, that effect, or whatever you want to call it, that operator could be expressed in terms of the field. Maybe that's, I don't know. But let's say that goes through, then what else?
No, I mean, in a standard Hilbert space format, this is really true, even in the infinite dimensional case.
Yeah, that part goes through. And then what else? The other parts? What about the rest?
Honestly, I don't know. I think so. It's clear that for every pure state, you can always associate a unique projector.
Yes.
I think the problem was the opposite. Whether for any projector, rank one projector, you can associate a unique. I mean, so you say that there's no so substantial difference from the Hilbert to the Fock space.
What you might be thinking. I have a feeling what you might be thinking about a quantum field theory restricted to a finite region of space-time, say Minkowski space. Then, you know, then at least in the free theories where people know the algebra of operators associated to that region is types, what's called a type 3 factor, a type 3 for Neumann algebras. They don't have minimal projectors. Maybe that's what you're thinking.
Maybe something, I don't know. Yeah, I wasn't told the details of the thing. It's such that this shouldn't work.
But for the whole space-time, there shouldn't be such a problem. But then what about the rest of your results? I mean, suppose we just got the existence of the diagonalization.
Yeah, I'm thinking where you get it. So the existence of the diagonalization was proved by means of some kind of algorithm, and this algorithm involved some kind of steps, so it was done in a stepwise thing. I don't know whether we can say that we achieve some such diagonalization if this algorithm in principle doesn't even stop because we have an infinite number of. That's maybe the problem.
Whether it converges or doesn't converge in some sense.
Yeah. I should conclude, but getting through the proof, I think no particular assumption were made about the dimensions of the thing, of the finite dimension, except the fact that this diagonalization had a finite number of terms. That was one of the assumptions. That's maybe the problem. But
I'm
trying
to
remember. But then. So you do this, and then you repeat it. Then you have, you want to check, because first you diagonalize. The thing goes that first you diagonalize, you decompose it in terms of pure states, in this kind of stepwise algorithm, and eventually you check that these states with another algorithm are all perfectly distinguishable from each other.
That's the thing. And I'm thinking,
what's the first, maybe you can say, what's the first step in the
So the first, yeah, the first step in the algorithm was to determine the pure states arising in a convex decomposition of rho with the maximum weight.
I don't know how you prove it exists, but it doesn't seem like it. It seems the good chance of going over to the infinite dimension.
Yeah, which the problem is that maybe
because there might be an infinite number. No, well, that can't happen.
So let me suggest maybe.
Yeah, maybe go.
You guys could chat about this and just thank Carla Maria again.
Thanks. Thank you very much.